Well, a home is a whole lot more than four walls and a roof, isn't it? It's a place to relax and recharge, spend time with friends and families, and so much more. Today, we're going to take a look at kitchen and bathroom renovations. That's where we're going to zero in to make your home more comfortable and well-suited to your needs. Chad Spate, one of our guests from Chad's Design Build, he comes by every couple months to share information on making sure that your home is in good shape. And Chad, good to see you again.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
And with us again today, back after I think about a year or so, Chuck Weidenbach. Chuck is a graduate of the Interior Design Program at Madison College, a design specialist, has a lot of experience, works with the Kitchen Ideas Center in Madison, been a member of that team since 1998. And Chuck, great to have you back.
Larry, thanks so much. Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you back. You by the way, you're a design specialist at the Kitchen Ideas Center. Yep. By the way, we have links to both the Kitchen Ideas Center and Chad's Design Build on our Facebook page. So if you want to see more about those organizations, their businesses, why, please feel free to go to our Facebook page. But what are some of the most common goals that you see? Let's take kitchens first and kitchen renovations.
Well, I'd probably say the first thing that people want to do is they want this thing to function better. They have old setups. These are kitchens that were built in the 50s and 60s and 70s, sometimes, you know, 20s and 30s. And modern life is a much, much different thing. And what people are wanting to do is have these areas not only be more functional, but also much more open to the rest of the home. And they're looking for this room to, for lack of a better way of saying it, integrate into the rest of their lives and make it a real social hub. So the kitchen has become from a service area 100 years ago to be something much more of a social hub in the rest of the home.
Yeah, where do you spend your time when you have people over?
Well, the kitchen, and they sit on your range and hang over your sink. And, you know, so maybe we should say we have, like, defensive kitchens that allow you to actually work in them perhaps sometimes. But
And then the bathroom? What are the bathroom typical renovations?
Yeah, the biggest thing that we're seeing these days from our clients is wanting to convert the tub into a walk-in shower. In many older homes, the tub and shower share a space, and there isn't enough room to have a separate shower unless you just do away with the tub entirely. And a growing number of people are willing to take that leap and perhaps even not have a tub in their home, dare I say it. but it's so practical because we find that, you know, 98% of us, and I did just make up that statistic, but I mean, no one takes a tub anymore. I mean, it takes a bath and a tub. Yeah. So having a shower that's comfortable and functional and allows us to enjoy that, you know, 5 to 15 minute routine of cleaning up, why not?
Yeah, absolutely. So, why not? Well, We have questions already online. I want to give our listeners a chance to join us, and I did not give the number earlier, so let me do it right now. If you have a question or comment for our guests, call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And let's take a call from Lauren. Lauren, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. We have relatives in Louisiana, and they have a shower where you can walk right in. There's about a 3-inch lip and then the shower curtain. And I don't see those up here, and I'm interested in one.
Okay. Well, it's a good question. There's actually a wide range of options when you remodel a shower area or if you're converting a tub to a shower. What we increasingly see in our market here are people who want what's called a curbless entry, where there isn't that 3-inch curb at the bottom. There's actually the floor just goes right into the shower. There's nothing to trip on or step over, and that's very friendly for people of all ages. It makes it easier to age in place and have a safer shower. But you can definitely put in a unit that does have a small curb. They're just a wide variety of design options. When you don't have a curb, you do have to be very concerned about making sure that when the water gets out of that shower area, it will find its way back into the drain. We have a growing number of enclosures where we don't actually have a door on them, where it's designed to, a little bit of water gets out, it'll find its way back in, and that works just beautifully, and you don't even have to fuss with a door or a curtain. There are a lot of ways to do it. The other thing I'll comment on are the materials. The typical shower does have a preformed curb or base pan that is put in, and that is brought in, manufactured offsite, brought in and installed on the floor of the shower, and then the walls might be solid surface material or they could be tiled. Often when we have a curbless unit, it's all tile.
Yeah.
So a lot of care goes into the waterproofing of the surface prior to installation of the tile. And if that's done well, it should provide many years of...
My daughter's room, she has a shower, and it's you walk right straight into it. There's no door. It's really quite attractive, and she likes it a lot.
Yeah.
Can you give me a supplier or a manufacturer?
Well, I would say one of the best places to start would be to contact a plumber. I would recommend always the National Association of the Remodeling Industry if you're looking to renovate. And there you're going to find reputable plumbers and plumbing fixture suppliers. The largest supplier in... And I forget where you're located.
Lord.
Okay. The largest supplier in the country, and also one that's fairly well represented in the Madison area, is Ferguson Enterprises. They're a large plumbing distributor, and they have a nice showroom in Madison, and they have one in Milwaukee, and I'm sure in other places. And of course, you can go into various home improvement stores, big box stores, and get ideas. I mean, you're going to see a variety of shower base pans in any store or showroom that does bathroom renovation.
Yep.
So.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Appreciate the call and the question. I'm sure it's one that other people have as well. Jared in McFarland has a question. Let's go to Jared. Hi, thank you for calling.
Great, thank you. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have an older home, 65 years old, and it's a typical three-bedroom 990 square feet. And my question is, the bathroom is quite small, shower, standard bathroom. When you open the door, it kind of only goes 90 degrees and hits the tub.
Yep.
My question is, the tub is your standard cast iron tub. I'm looking to make it bigger. Pushing walls out isn't an option. I'm trying to utilize the floor space that's there. Is there a product or is there a way to, it just seems like there's so much wasted space with a standard tub. Is there a product out there that kind of utilizes that kind of footprint of where the tub is to maximize the space and length and depth of that to make a nice bath?
Do you use the tub?
I try to. Sometimes it's nice to soak, but it's more for my daughter. She's 10 years old and likes to take tubs.
Okay.
So is the issue that the water is not deep enough in the current tub?
It's not deep enough, and it's really not long enough. I mean, just kind of looking at my tub, as standard cast iron tub, from wall to wall, it looks like, we're wasting like 8-9 inches of space that could go, clear to the drywall, basically, or if you tiled it, where you could have a really big square there. I didn't know if there was a product that you could, remove that cast iron tub and drop something in.
Certainly there are variations in different tubs, and it could be that you could find a tub that would be a larger actual soaking area, but there will always be a fairly substantial perimeter curb on a tub, and that's actually why we often encourage people who only use a shower to convert to the shower because you actually gain back all that space. But when you have a tub where you're trying to hold water, I understand what you're asking, but I don't know of anyone that makes something that hugs the walls in a way that would really give you that space. And often a tub is designed so that when you are down in it and you are, you know, sitting there, it provides some comfort. There are some curves in it that are designed to make it more comfortable to be in it, because most of us cannot actually sit in the tub and have our feet go all the way to the end. You know, yeah. You're going to be kind of bunched up in there. So certainly the other option, which you said you didn't want to consider, but if it were possible to move a wall a foot in the area of the tub, then you could...
There just isn't any room. It's tight.
Right.
Okay.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We're talking today with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Chuck Weidenbach of Kitchen Ideas Center in Madison. Great to have both of them with us as we talk. Been zeroing in a bit on kitchen and bathroom renovations, and I guess we've been mostly bathrooms so far, which is fine. You may have a question. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Arlene in New Berlin has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Arlene. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry. I'm glad you took my call. I have a couple of questions for the gentleman or things to say. First of all, I have a small ranch style home that my bathroom is not that big. It was built in 1953, and so I'm concerned about redoing the bathroom, which I may do. The people have been telling me, you know, I should take out the tub, blah blah blah. I don't want to do that because I found out that when you sell your home, if there's not a tub in your house, people don't really like that. And so they are saying that if you're going to remodel your bathroom, you know, put in a tub, which I'm going to put in. I like a tub myself. And, you know, so, and in my other house that I had a smaller bathroom than this one. And I had a clawfoot tub, which was a nice soaking tub. I didn't have a shower, but I missed that. So those are the two things. But they should check out about real estate people telling you when you do sell your home that the resale value may not be there as much as if you had a tub in the with a shower. So that's my lament, and I'll take my question off the air.
All right.
Well, I think that there's a couple of ways to look at that. And one, if you do talk to realtors, they do tend to push the tub part of it fairly strong. And so I'm not a realtor, so I can't speak to that. I can say that I've been in this thing long enough to know that this is somewhat regional. Also, people, whether the tub needs to be there or not, young parents do like to have a tub for their children. And the idea of a shower without a tub is taking a lot more. It's taking a lot more traction. I mean, this is something that people are wanting to. The first gentleman who called regarding the smaller tub, he either gets a tiny tub or he gets a generous shower. And I think in some ways this begins to even out for some people, especially in this area where in my home I have a 1965 small ranch myself. The tub is very small. And the only way that I would see making that significantly better would be to remove it and put in a shower. I have not elected to do that yet for other reasons other than resale. But I would say that the idea that there must be a tub in a house, I sense that's changing. A realtor might have a little bit of a different take on that. But professionally, talking to clients, talking to people who are doing work in their own homes, I'd say that there's a shift going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would just add that it's an excellent question, and we always discuss that issue with our clients. You know, sometimes we have a client come to us and say, we want to convert the tub to a shower, and we say, well, okay, we'd be happy to do that. And have you thought about the impact that might have on resale? And so often a client will say, well, you know, I'm going to live here 10 years or longer, so I don't really care what impact it has because I want the house to be what I want it to be. Mm-hmm. If someone hasn't considered the option or don't think they can do it, we let them know that, well, in fact, it is a trend that is becoming more popular. And a growing number of realtors I'm finding are much more open to the idea, at least in the Madison market. They're finding that houses can be very attractive to potential clients that have a nice walk-in shower and perhaps don't have that tub amenity. So,
And I would also say that to the last caller also was talking about resale, and she was also talking about a house that had a clawfoot tub with no shower on it. I actually might consider that to be something that might be a little more challenging to someone. Yeah. So resale is one of those things also where you are talking about a subjunctive person in the future having value or not having value for your home. And as Chad said, if you're going to be there for a while, why not have it be the way that you want to have it for your own lifestyle?
Yeah. And I'll tell you that that shower area in my daughter's room is really attractive. I think people kind of say, wow, that's pretty nice.
Right.
So it can be very nice. Arlene, though, thank you so much for your comments. I appreciate it. Joel in Milwaukee has something for us. So let's go there. Joel, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Joel, is this me? Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay. So here's my question. First of all, I love a tub. And when I had a renovation recently, and I put a nice deep tub in, and my contractor used to have it more economic. We used a plastic synthetic tub material. It was very light, like some type of a polyester type of tub, I'm guessing.
It was probably a fiberglass acrylic.
Fiberglass, yeah. Thank you. And so here's the issue. He put in a tile that was a type of stone. I think it was a type of granite stone. And regardless of how he caulked it, it keeps popping from the tile. And he's done it so many times. And at this point, he just left it as it is. And I'm now having major mold issues. And he just kind of has washed his hands clean of taking responsibility of figuring out how to make the seal stay.
Sure.
So the tub, I'm assuming, is when it's heating up, it's contracting, and then it's cooling down.
Well, so that could be part of the problem. Of course, different materials and different manufacturers, we see such a variety that often we have to look at something to know really what might be going on. But are you having any issues with water getting beyond the tub? I mean, any leaking in the floor below or anything like that?
No, not on the floor below, but definitely around the perimeter of the tub.
Okay.
It just, the caulking materials that he used just will not stay secure. It keeps popping. And it was done over a year ago, and at this point now, it is starting to become a mold issue.
Right.
So I suppose I'm wondering is there anything I can do or buy that can navigate through the contracting and expanding?
Well, the caulks that we use in a tub, typically those are silicone caulks, and we almost use the silicone caulks exclusively in the tub area because it is such a wet area, and mm-hmm. you can't paint a silicone caulk, but you just use a color that's appropriate, often either a clear or a white caulk in that area, and that can take care of it. So it could just be the quality of the caulk that's being used, and so I would recommend trying to find a better quality caulk, and then you're going to need to clean the area very well prior to re-caulking it, and also you're going to have to dry it out. And the last thing I'll say is that often with a caulk that's put on a tub, you need to let it stay dry for at least 24 hours prior to using the tub. The longer the better, but a minimum of 24 hours, because if the caulk does not properly cure and then you use it as a shower, then you're going to, probably see it start to fail. So those are all things which will contribute to a successful and hopefully more of a permanent re-caulking of the tub.
Great. Well, I will look for those products. And by the way, I do a fusion with the showering in my tub. I like to lie in my tub and shower at the same time. So I don't know if that's an alternative to people.
Sure.
But as I'm listening, that's what I love.
Okay. Yeah. Very good.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Those products makes a big difference, doesn't it, which ones you're using.
So, absolutely.
Glad to have your experience there, Chad. We have Lisa in Stoughton. Here we are finally with a kitchen question, so let's go there. Hi, Lisa. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My question is about a kitchen sink. We have what looks like maybe ceramic or porcelain. It's white, and it's part of a solid surface counter. It's an undermount. And the bottom of the sink has like 1,000 little cracks in it. It looks really bad. They're gray. And I'm wondering, instead of replacing it, would you consider refinishing it, like buying some of that Rust-Oleum tub and tile or doing something like that? Or do we need to just replace it?
Well, not seeing precisely what you're up against, I would say it's a complicated problem. I think my guess, without knowing anything else, is that you'll eventually be at a spot where you'll likely need to replace it. That would be my guess, without knowing anything else about it. However, I would say at this point, it's pretty hard to hurt anything any further. I'd say if you have something that sounds pretty creative to go at this, why not? I don't think that it may actually not look very good, and it may push you closer and faster to a replacement. But I'm thinking that there's not something that I can think of, whether it's with a Rust-Oleum or a glazing, like the same type of process that's done with tub glazing. Your sink is getting a lot more abrasive use. It's getting a lot more wear than some of those other plumbing appliances that use those processes. My guess is that if at the very best, it might look good for a little bit, and I think it's going to kind of get nasty again. So I would say if you have the notion, give it a shot. I would at least begin to think that these would be temporary solutions, and it might be the gorier, larger replacement that eventually happens.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Another Lisa sent us a note, a photo on Facebook, and is wondering, she's remodeling the kitchen. It says this wall is the only wall for cabinets. We'd like to do an island also. Our thinking is the stove goes in the island, the fridge to the right of the window, and the dishwasher to the left of the window.
Well, from that picture, that looks feasible. I think part of it is going to end up being how much countertop you're trying to realize out of this space, and the picture is not showing dimensions. So it's kind of tough to see how much you're going to get out of that island. Your choices of appliances are going to be crucial on how this will work either better or poorer for how you'd like to set that up. In general, what she's talking about is a type of a galley kitchen, using an island as one side of that galley. You may have some concerns or questions about ventilation if you put the range or cooktop in an island. Perhaps the size of your sink is also going to play a factor in just how much, again, how much preparation, how much countertop area for preparation you have, and how spacious this room will end up being by the time it's all done. So let's just say your initial ideas seem like they would work, and the devil will be in the details.
Yeah, the ventilation, we have a kind of an island and a really cool-looking vent, but I'm seeing in this photo a chandelier-type
lighting
sitting right where the vent would probably go.
Well, that peak ceiling might actually handle smoke and, it just goes right up into there.
It does look like a problem, though.
Challenging. Yeah. One option is to potentially put in a downdraft system, though. It looks like there might be a cement floor there. I'm not
Hard
quite sure what we're looking at, but... because this looks like a log cabin.
Yeah. Which has its issues in terms of putting cabinets on it.
So. Correct. So there are many issues that a professional contractor might be of assistance here, I would say.
Let's say, for example, Chad, if you would go to a place like that, you'd have your own design ideas for the person, I would expect, or either.
Correct. That's correct.
Chad or Chuck, either one of you would.
Yeah, I mean, when client, you know, typically when a client comes in with a kitchen, I mean, we're going to connect them with someone like Chuck, who's going to give them, you know, professional kitchen layout and design advice. And that's really crucial as a first step. And then, of course, the issue of how to properly install everything, that's really where we come in.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of challenges in this particular space, but it's great to see that picture because it makes it all obvious.
Yeah, it sure does. Thanks for sending that, Lisa. Appreciate it very much. Charlie in Monona has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Charlie.
Good morning, guys. Quick comment and then a question. I have a 1954 vintage ranch. Took the tub out almost 10 years ago, replaced it with a receiver, and happy as a clam with it. So
it's
working out well. Resale value is only a problem for my heirs. So,
by the way, that's an excellent way to look at it. Congratulations.
Thank you. Worked out really well. My question is on lighting. I watched my mother and my grandmother. In the wintertime, their productive hours would end about 3 in the afternoon because they couldn't see well enough to sew or do other things like that. What is state-of-the-art, and is anybody doing any work regarding, you know, visual acuity of older folks, especially where, you know, we have so much light?
Well, that's an excellent question, Charlie. Of course, the most popular lighting that's available now in almost every form that we're accustomed to having a light is LED lighting. Mm-hmm. One of the challenges with LED lighting is the spectrum that it presents to us. The original LED lighting that came out is a very cold, very true kind of blue light, but there are many warmer options now in the spectrum, and so whether or not it's, you know, a floor lamp or recessed down lighting or the fixtures that we typically mount on a wall or ceiling, you know, that option of having the LED diode in it has started to really take over the lighting industry. But then there are still other things out there. It's not uncommon. I know I too have a 50s ranch in Monona, and you know, that home has practically no ceiling fixtures in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything is a switched outlet that lights a lamp. So one option that we do for many clients is we simply add ceiling fixtures in the homes, and sometimes that's recessed lighting. The one thing I do want to mention is whenever you put lighting in the top floor of a home, be it a ranch or if it's a second story up in the bedrooms, you want to make sure that things are installed, that everything's properly air sealed, that if it is a recessed light fixture, that it's designed to be completely sealed and there won't be any air and heat leaking through that, which will then cause other problems. But there really are a multitude of options for permanently installed light fixtures. You know, we don't see many of the track lights nowadays. I mean, they're still out there, but they've just kind of fallen out of kind of vogue. But that is an excellent way to provide directional lighting if that's what you're wanting to do. We still occasionally do put in some attractive track lighting for clients that are looking for that particular goal in their lighting. And then, of course, in a kitchen, the big improvement that we often make, and Chuck can probably speak more to this, but it's the under cabinet lighting we put in.
And under cabinet lighting is, I think, I've run into very few projects where it would not make a significant improvement in that room to have under cabinet lighting. I think that that's one area in Madison with the prevalence of that 50s and 60s style home. The lighting is usually the worst thing in the house in that kitchen. It's usually very poorly done. So, Charlie, I would probably say that not masquerading as a lighting professional, but I have a passing interest in it. What I would say is that you're looking, at least I'm looking to try and minimize shadow in work areas. So if I can look at that as like a primary goal, and when you're working on something, you have less shadow, you have more illumination on that countertop, I think that it's also a very gentle con into making you think you have more space and a larger room. So it's not just even a practical foot candles on the countertop sort of argument, but it's also something is, can we convince you into thinking that you have more space in an existing area?
Very
and lighting
cool.
really helps that.
Very, very cool. Thanks a lot for calling, Charlie. Appreciate it. Talking today with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Chuck Weidenbach of Kitchen Idea Center in Madison as we take a look primarily at bathrooms and kitchens today, but we'll take other questions as well. Larry Mueller here. Rebecca Haas, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your home and a look at trends in kitchen and bathroom renovations with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison, formerly Chad's Carpentry, and Chuck Weidenbach, who is with Kitchen Idea Center in Madison. And as again, I have links to their businesses on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show if you want to take a closer look. Join in with your own questions or comments. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our page. Or give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Jessica in Porterfield, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I have a question about remodeling my bathroom. I saw on Pinterest, of course, a really cute remodel of the... I have a Whirlpool tub and there's cupboard doors on it. And what they did is they just put some MDF board in front of it and cut a fancy design in it, and it looked really cool. But I have children, so I'm assuming MDF board will not hold up to them getting in and out of the tub. So I was wondering if there was a better product, plastic or something, that would be better for
so,
that.
So these are the access panels that are on the permanent walls around the tub, is that correct?
Right, yep.
Okay.
And I was thinking I could just make a board and then, like, have screws on the corners with the little knobs that go over the screws. But then you could unscrew it if you needed to get in.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I think that,
that
you,
logical.
Yeah, you've touched on what I would suggest to be the most important design element or practical element in this. That is making sure that it is attached in a way that it's not just going to accidentally fall off. And so if you do have some screws that can be fastened through the panels, whatever they're made out of, then that will provide a safer enclosure. Certainly when any material that you have around a wet environment like that, around the tub with the amount of water that might be splashed on it, can be problematic. But that's really just a matter of you, you know, wiping it off after the kids have been in the tub. And, you know, you'll decide what material perhaps is best to use for your purposes.
Yeah, there you go.
So you don't, is there a better, is like hardwood better than like a manufactured or...
Well,
as far as water resistance?
I would say in general, a wood product is always going to have some vulnerability to water. And I think that that's, there are different finishes that you can put on them. There are marine finishes that you can put on some of these materials. There are other ones, depending on your budget, because this will enter into it. If you could do something like a solid surface, like a Corian, that is going to be inherently much more reliable as a material. Especially if you can put it on, take it, you know, screw it on and take it off, it'll be heavier and it will be more expensive. As a practical point, though, it is a material that would satisfy that specification for you. And again, there'll be other, you know, real world issues that kind of intersect in this and including cost.
Yeah.
And if you're using a wood product, depending on how big it is, I mean, if dimensional material, you know, if, say a 1x8 or a 1x10 or something isn't going to be large enough, I would generally recommend using an exterior grade plywood. They do have some plywoods that are that have a reasonably nice finish on one side that can be painted or stained, and then you're just going to have to maintain that finish and wipe it off with a towel at the end of the time in there.
Mm-hmm. So. There you go. Thanks, Jessica, for calling. Good luck. Appreciate it. Mark in Viroqua has a question. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I am trying to install an exhaust vent in a bathroom that just has one light switch, one light fixture, ceiling fixture, and it's never had an exhaust vent in it. And I'm getting, of course, a steam problem with hot showers. And the problem I have is that the attic above is really difficult to work in just because the roof is a 312 pitch and there's web trusses and you'd have to hire, you know, a midget to actually get in there.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if I could have some PVC bent, or, you know, a 90-degree PVC tube and go over to the overhang. This bathroom is has an outside wall, and I'm wondering if I could vent that steam over to the overhang, actually put another 90-degree and point it down into the soffit, cut a hole in the soffit,
right?
Versus cutting a hole into the drain vent, or cutting another hole in my roof. And there's just other problems too. It's a northern exposure home, and it gets a lot of snow on the roof. You know, so I really don't want to run a vent pipe up through the roof. But have you ever seen, or maybe you got another idea for me?
Well, it's a great question, and I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, it's a difficult area to get into. So there are a couple of things that I would recommend and that you're going to want to think about. On the face of it, venting over to the soffit seems like a potentially great idea, but there are two challenges with that. One is it's because it's going to be the tightest area, the most difficult to get to, and we often find that the soffit, that the roof rafters are right sitting on that exterior wall plate. So there's almost no room to pass the vent to the exterior soffit. There might be 2 to 4 inches there of space. Really not adequate space to put a 4-inch pipe out to that soffit. And then the problem is going to be once you vent down to that soffit, you're going to have a lot of resistance in the airflow, and then the air, that moist air, is going to come right back up to the soffit and want to condense on the outside of the home. So there are all sorts of potential problems that you could see there. I would recommend just going through the roof because, one, you're going to get better airflow. You have a more direct path. And for you to effectively vent the humidity out of the bathroom, which is the goal you're trying to accomplish, by having a shorter path and a more direct path for that air, the fan is going to work more effectively. And a properly installed roof vent is not going to cause any issues with leaking. And it also will allow you to just connect the dots properly. Two things I want to say is that when you do hook up the vent, it's very important that duct be sealed. You want to tape it to the fan, and you want to tape it to the vent that's on the roof, or if it were in the soffit, to that vent. And then that should be an insulated duct, because the warm, moist air that's going through that duct, if the duct itself gets really cold in the winter or is allowed to just be out in the attic, it will be cold and you will get condensation forming in it, and that will drip back into your bathroom.
We've heard that before on this program.
We have.
People calling about that.
Yes. Yes,
that particular issue.
And if you think you're being clever and you put a loop in it, what you may find is you end up with a block of ice in the bottom of the loop, and then you don't. Not only do you have ice, but you have no airflow. So it is the quickest way out, and sealing it and insulating it will accomplish the task, and I think you'll be happy with the end result. I also just wanted to say that, you know, you mentioned you have one wire, and so you're essentially going to be replacing the ceiling light with a combination fan light unit. It is possible that you can simply do that if the wiring's up to code and you just have a single switch, and then when you turn that on, it powers up the fan and the light. There's nothing wrong with that, provided that you have wiring that is up to code and the proper amperage to be able to operate the fan.
There we go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Question from Sue that kind of relates to this. Now it's windy outside. My bathroom fan makes noise like something is flapping open and shut. how can I fix it so I won't have the noise? It's very annoying. Well, it probably is flapping open at you.
It is. Yes, that flapper is designed to close when when air is not being pushed out of it, so that you don't get a lot of cold air coming back into the bathroom. Because essentially, wherever there is a ventilation fan, there's a direct path from inside the house to the exterior. So it would not be uncommon to put your hand up on the fan on a really cold Wisconsin winter day and feel cold air falling out of that unit. So those flappers are designed to minimize that. But when it's windy and you get the air pressure that's happening between inside and out, you're going to hear the flapping. And there's some things that can be done, but it normally is just a sign that you have an operating flapper.
All right.
It's called free diagnostics at that point. Yeah.
We had an email question from Cindy. Has a galley kitchen, needs an update, 21-plus years old, looking at flooring, countertops, appliances, cabinets. Cabinets are solid, she says, but may need a resurface or a surface cleaning and refresh. Where do you start?
Well, that is a bundle of questions right there. I think the place to start would be to begin to identify priorities, because I think that any one of those things can actually end up driving a project all on its own. Each one of them has some real complications and some advantages to each potential aspect of it. And when I talk about identifying priorities, for instance, if you have older cabinets that are solid and you want to put a nicer countertop on it, let's say granite or quartz or a solid surface, I think that you need to project yourself into not just years, but potentially decades ahead. Are those cabinets there for the long term to actually put something nicer onto them? How is that going to project out into the goals that you have with your own home? There are floating floors. There are solid wood floors that are actually, part of the house. I think that each one of the choices that this person would make are going to have some kind of influence on where to start. And the main priority, I would say, is that what is the thing that you really want to... You said, I have to do this project because of X. Trust your gut. Start with that. And I believe that that will at least begin to lay a foundation for you to make the other decisions you need to. It's very common for people to get very overwhelmed by looking at an entire project and saying, oh my goodness, where do I go from here? You can always bring in a professional and they can help you work through some of the options that you have and work through the potential priorities. But if you're starting on your own, look inside, say, this has got to change because I'm done with it, and then start from that to make the rest of your decisions.
Talking today with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison and Chuck Weidenbach of Kitchen Idea Center in Madison about home renovations. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison, Chuck Weidenbach of Kitchen Idea Center in Madison. Happy to have them with us, and thank you for joining in. We have every line filled at 1-800-642-1234, so let's see if we can get somebody on here. Leslie in Hartford, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. While I was on hold, I thought of another question, and I'll go there first, and if you have time, maybe we can get to mine. But I was talking to my daughter-in-law about her bathroom, and she has a 1960s ranch, and it has ceramic tile in the shower. But it's old, it's like harvest gold, and there's some cracks in it. And she thought that ripping that out and putting in like one of those vinyl shower surrounds would be the way to go. And I said to her, well, that's not going to add value to your house. Was I wrong? Mm. Can I give her
no, you weren't. Advice? You were not wrong. I don't think.
Yeah, okay. No, I mean, it is, so certainly the way to do it right, you've got a lot of materials that she could put up in that bathroom and still be happy with the end result, and it not be the least expensive, kind of tackiest approach.
Exactly.
And you know, whether or not she spends a couple of $1,000s redoing the walls or $10,000, I mean, that's going to depend on the material. But the putting up the you know, $500 vinyl cover is definitely going to detract from the value of the home. And there are actually some relatively nice products that can be installed potentially right over top of those old tiles. It's not something that I tend to do with my clients, but if budget is a real concern, there's some companies out there that do, they do kind of inserts into tubs, and then they do kind of an overlay on the walls, and they often use a material that is similar to like a faux marble or a Corian type of material. It can look quite attractive, and it can be a reasonably nice way to rehab a space that has some real issues. Typically, though, my recommendation, if it can be afforded, is to tear down that wall, properly waterproof it, and then whatever material you decide to put up, you put that around the old tub.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone
I know is putting in subway tile in their bathroom. Boy, does it look nice.
Yeah.
It's really attractive.
It's a great way to go.
Well, and that leads me to my question, if that's okay. I would love to put subway tile in my kitchen, but I have plaster walls, and my question with that is, do they have to knock out all the plaster and then put up the cement board and then apply the tiles, or
no.
Would they go over the top of that? Or?
Well, I wouldn't think so. I mean, what you need for that tile backsplash in general, and again, I speak as not a tile professional, but someone who has a passing interest, is a flat wall. I mean, I think you need the flat surface in order to make that tile sit properly, and especially with something that is horizontal, like a subway tile, you will see undulation and movement along that line if the wall is not flat behind it, including you might end up seeing some unusual grout lines. So I think the thing with plaster is, as long as it's flat, there's really not a lot of additional preparation that's tending to be. It's not the same as a tub. It's not getting the same kind, or a shower, not getting the same kind of water volume and water direction. It tends to be something that gets a little bit of tomato sauce or whatever kind of detritus is coming out of the kitchen. But I don't think that as long as you end up with an in-plane straight wall or flat wall, I think that's the thing that's going to help you the most.
Yep. There you go. Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Dan has a question for us. Hi, Dan. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I am calling about a concrete sink.
Okay.
And the sink, the surface is kind of, you know, wore off down to the concrete, so, and it's getting porous. And I was just wondering what I could use to resurface that, you know, like some kind of paint or...
Is this in a kitchen or is this in a laundry room?
Down in the basement.
Okay. So it's going to see, again, a lot of abrasion. I mean, mostly what we have seen in recent concrete and innovations are different sorts of reapplyable coatings that will give you at least a wear layer between you and the concrete. Now that maybe the base material, the concrete, has been exposed, you may have some trouble actually covering that up effectively. There are several wax products that are used, but they require continual application. So again, you can try painting it. I have not seen that work effectively long term. And it is the added benefit, perhaps, of being in a laundry area, so it doesn't have to look gorgeous. If you were thinking about, again, putting something on it, I would say that in an existing sink, you probably are still going to be looking at something that you need to use over and over and over in order to keep that that exposed area somewhat. And I say sealed. It's not really sealed, just covered. But that's kind of the way I would look at concrete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would just add that in the Madison area, there's some professionals that do concrete resurfacing. They will apply a covering to a cement floor or a floor in a basement or in a garage. And a product like that might be something to consider. You could have it professionally applied. Mm-hmm. It might be quite cost effective in just a laundry sink. So
yeah,
something to think about.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks a lot for calling. And Sandy in Eau Claire, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call. My question is, I want to finish my walkout basement area. And I'm struggling between, do I put in a suspended ceiling or do I go ahead and car side the ceiling? I've had a couple different bids quoting both ways, and it would be cheaper if I went with, like, car siding the ceiling as I want to do the wall. What are your thoughts?
So, the car, I understand the car siding. What was the other option that you...
A suspended ceiling.
Oh, suspended.
Was... Oh, drop ceiling. Okay,
okay, right. So, here are the issues that I would talk to you about or urge you to consider. So, typically, the drop ceiling gives you maximum access to all the things that are buried up there in the ceiling below your main home. And so that's the advantage to that. And often we tell people, well, you can put up drywall because even though you have to cut a hole in it, it's not difficult to repair a hole in drywall. When you're putting up a tongue-in-groove wood paneling on the ceiling, you really are making it inaccessible without some major expense or obvious, you know, repairs needed, not easy to patch, not easy to take out a section. That said, you could design some access panels into it in appropriate places. Often the really clever way to disguise an access panel in a basement is to take a return air grill and put the hole in the ceiling and put that grill up there. And the grill, you would think it's for the heating vents, but it really is just there to give you access to that area. So, you know, maybe things like that. Of course, if you did have to cut a hole down the line, you could repair it with something like that and just put in the faux grill. And but those are the sorts of issues that I would consider.
And Sandy, thank you very much for calling. We have Chad Spate of Chad's Carpentry, Chad's Design Build, excuse me. That's the title of his business, Chad's Design Build. Chuck Weidenbach of the Kitchen Idea Center in Madison. With us till 12:30 today, we're going to take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with our guests. You stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at trends in kitchen and bathroom renovations. We discuss other renovations as well with our two guests, Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build in Madison and Chuck Weidenbach, who is with Kitchen Ideas Center in Madison. We have links to both of their businesses on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show for that. You can get linked right in. Appreciate having them along. And again, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Nick in Milwaukee said, my husband and I live in a small ranch home. I'd like to have the washer and dryer on the main floor instead of the basement. The only option I see is installing a stacking washer dryer in the bathroom where the closet is now. What are the pros and cons of that? Would you recommend it or not?
Yeah, well, it's a great question, and it's definitely something that a growing number of people are doing in their homes, and you know, a lot of newer homes certainly get built with a convenient laundry. So the issues that we have to look at, you know, a laundry has a lot of requirements. You're going to be venting the dryer. Of course, you've got water and a drain for the washing machine. A lot of times dryers now have a steam feature, so they're also going to have water. And you've got to accommodate the space for all of that. Washers and dryers have gotten a little bit wider and a little bit deeper over the last 10 years. And a lot of these efficiency units, you know, they're front loading. So you've got to have the clearance for the doors opening and closing. So there are a lot of things to consider spatially as well as all the mechanical requirements. Sometimes we find that the bathroom itself, unless it's particularly spacious, does not have the room to accommodate everything that's going to be needed for that. We'd have to look at a space to determine that. But many times we're able to take a closet in an adjoining bedroom and convert that. That's a possibility. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's a hallway closet, which is actually large enough to be turned into a stackable washer-dryer work area. But you want to think about where you're going to have room to load and unload or deal with things like that to keep your detergent and other things. So there are just a lot of things to think about, and it's often helpful to invite over a professional for a design consultation.
The other thing is, I have one on the second floor, and I had to address some noise issues with that wood floor as opposed to a basement, and so there's some baffling and so forth that needs to be done to address the noise. And the other issue is typically it's recommended that you keep the washer door ajar, or at least that's what we were told, and I keep it ajar. And if you've got a door or a pathway through there, you've kind of watch for that.
A lot of those new washers are actually going to have a very light magnetic catch, which will allow that air circulation, and it's usual to keep that smell. There's a certain unpleasant smell that can come up with a wet front-loading washer. So many of the new ones are going to have that feature that allows it to not have to be fully ajar and still allow the circulation that you need. So.
Yeah, I wish I had that. And my washer's only about 3 years old or 2.5 years old, so I must have just missed that. Because believe me, it was not the cheapest washer in the store.
No.
Marion Nelville, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I live in a ranch-style 1970s-type house, and the kitchen is really quite dark, and there's really no way of adding a larger window to the room without taking away my cupboard space, which I can't afford to sacrifice. And I was wondering, I've heard of these they're not like a skylight, but they're a round can light that comes down. My husband will not put a skylight in because he's never seen one that didn't leak. Nice. And I was wondering if these can openings, if they are better than the normal skylights. I know they don't bring down as much light, but I'm worried about leakage.
Boy, they bring a lot of light.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I have one in my house, actually. It's called a solar tube. It has changed the entire nature of a very dark hallway in my home.
Okay.
We found it to be a pretty nice solution for our space, including no issues with leaking, no issues with condensation. We have an electrical light that's in it also.
Oh.
So at the risk of sounding like a shill for the solar tube industry, I think it's a terrific idea.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would just add that it's certainly more cost effective to put in the sun tunnel or solar tube than it is to put in a traditional skylight, because with a skylight you have to build the shaft that goes up from the ceiling to the roof, and you have to properly insulate that. But the other thing I just want to say is that, you know, we install skylights all the time, and I don't think we've ever had a callback for a leak. And so a properly installed skylight, and a quality skylight, I mean, Velux skylights are really the standard in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
They're cold weather climate product. And if that's properly installed, you're going to get to see the sky. If you wanted to have a window on the roof, but then if you just want to bring in light, the solar tubes are a great way to go. And all of these things, you know, if they're not properly installed, can leak when you put a hole through the roof. So, but I would encourage you to do what works best for you.
Okay, well, I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. I'm amazed at how much light those solar tubes. Just amazing.
Well, it's impressive. Yeah. I'll walk out of a bedroom and then I'll try and turn the light on and off because it's that bright.
Yes.
And a few years later, still unfortunately trying to turn the light off. So hopefully I'll never succeed in turning the sun off. That would be bad.
Yeah, the trick is they have like an aluminum foil lining in that tube, and it's just it's so reflective that it just, you know.
It works well.
Yeah.
John in Rhinelander has a comment for us. Hi, John.
Hi. Hi, Chuck and Chad.
Hi.
My comment is for the guy who had the caulk seal failing between his tub and the tile, it sounded like.
Yes.
Yeah.
One thing that he might also want to consider there is the support under his tub.
Yes.
Fiberglass tubs are notorious for flexing a little bit, and that might be part of his problem.
That's an excellent point.
And also I had a question about the bathroom fan vent. I have that same situation where my bathroom can only be vented either into the attic or out onto the soffit. But I have one other option that I thought maybe I'd run by you. You talked about an insulated tube running to the ceiling. Is it possible? I have an attached garage. Would it be possible I could run it from that ceiling fan across my attic out into the open garage area, which would also protect it from wind? And I'll take my comment, or I mean your response off.
Sure. Well, so there are a couple of things that, as far as the fan operating well to get the humidity out of the bathroom, the shorter the duct length is and the fewer turns in it, the better. When you're calculating airflow through that duct, every 90-degree turn is the equivalent of a 10-foot straight run in the duct. So, you know, if you put three turns in a duct, you've essentially created a 30-foot-long duct plus whatever actual length you have in the duct. So generally, taking it straight out the roof is the best thing to do. Again, a properly installed roof vent, just like a properly installed skylight or any other penetration in the roof, is not going to leak. And it is going to get that moisture out. And when you dump moisture onto a roof, you know, one of the things you're doing is you're putting it someplace designed to get wet. So you don't have to worry about the fact that that moisture is going to condense once it hits the roof. And that's where you might have a problem if you vent out into your garage, is that you're going to be dumping really warm, moist air into a garage that's probably quite a bit cooler in the winter. And so you might have problems with condensation out there. Now, I don't want to, without seeing the space, it could be that it's a perfectly reasonable thing to do at your home. And you add a little moisture out there and you're able to keep an eye on it. And if you can see all the framing elements and you see that they're not having condensation or ice crystals form on them or mold, then maybe that would work for you. But generally, best building practice is to get that moisture to the exterior.
There we go. Thanks again for calling, Ron, in Michigan. Hello, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Yes, we have a new home, and the problem is when my wife cooks, the cooking odors permeate the whole house. Now, when we first bought our house, there's a, right above the range, there's an area for a microwave. We purchased a microwave, and the company that we bought it for had their own installation person who came out to install a microwave. And when he looked at the venting, there is provisions for venting above the microwave area that goes up to the roof. And when the installation man saw that, he says, "I cannot install your microwave because you only have a 4-inch vent to the ceiling. And the code says you must have 6 inches." So he would not, he refused to install a microwave. So I was able to get somebody to install it, and the microwave that I have has a baffle that you can turn for outside venting, or the microwave has provisions for venting it right into the house. Well, that's what we did, but I can't live with the cooking fumes that, you know, permeate the house. So I don't know what to do. I don't know if the 4-inch tube to the roof can be replaced with 6 inches, if there's enough room or not. And I know that there is an adapter that goes from 6 inches that necks down to 4 inches.
Right.
But
yeah,
you probably are going to need to upsize the venting on that for it to work properly. But the other thing that I will just recommend that you or the installer look at is that most of those microwave units, the blower that's inside of it can be positioned often in three different ways. It can either vent out of the back, vent out of the top, or vent to the front, where it just becomes a recirculating device. And how that fan is placed into the unit upon installation will determine whether or not it's venting at all. And sometimes you can have a microwave up there that actually is not, it's running, but it's not venting to the outside. And you could have all the ductwork in place, but the fan is not properly positioned in the unit. And so I would just say that that could be part of the problem too, that it might not be the ductwork. It could be that the fan has not been properly positioned when the unit was installed.
Well, it's certainly worth looking. Yeah, we lost Ron. Certainly worth looking at.
Definitely.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks for calling. Dan, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. My question is to your guests and yourself, obviously. We have a two-story ranch, and there's a bathroom upstairs on the first floor, and there's a bathroom on the second floor, on the second floor, and they both have tubs. Now, the upstairs one is one of those, I want to say it's made more of a plastic. You find them in motels, and the first floor one is of a cast iron nature. When you stand in it, it's one of your older tubs. But they both have showers. Well, my wife wants to get rid of the one on the first floor and turn it into a walk-in shower. And I keep telling her that the resale value of the house will go down because of getting rid of that tub. And I'm not sure if I'm right on it or not, but it keeps me from having to take on that project.
I don't think you're going to like the answer we give you.
No, I know. But I mean, the thing is, my feeling was just that, to me, that like I say, the tub on the first floor is a very solid, well, it's cast iron, and versus the one up on the second floor is that plastic stuff. But I don't know. I imagine it will go by. It's been sitting. We've been in this house for over 20 some years, and this is the only sticking point we've ever had when it came to redoing things. And right now, it's been sitting this way. You know, the tiles are starting to fall off, and so it's
time to do something.
Yeah, okay. I think you need to act. Well, you know, I guess I kind of hear what you're saying. So one thing that I would reassure you is having one tub in the home is really, I've never heard a realtor say that, if you eliminate the second tub, that's problematic. Having one tub is really the only thing that some people consider essential. And it's definitely true that there are some home buyers that will not buy a home that does not have a tub in it. But to take the tub that would be more useful to you and convert it to a shower unit is absolutely kind of a foolproof proposition. And if you want to keep the cast iron tub because you think it's a better tub and the other tub really needs attention, then I would say remodel the tub that's falling apart, whichever one that is. I wasn't clear on that.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Concerning tubs, to keep going there, Mark of Winneconne wants to know what you think about these tubs that are kind of made for seniors with the doors that kind of open or slide up and down.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I mean, we haven't actually done them for any of our clients, but I see them every now and then in a potential client's home, and I've heard good things about them. I know our plumber installs them. You know, it's a great way to go if you have mobility issues, but you still want to be able to soak in the tub. The only thing that I would, point out is that obviously you have to get in it and then fill it up.
Yes.
So there is that little detail that some people, once they realize that's what has to happen, it takes a while to fill up a tub.
Yeah.
So you're sitting there waiting for the tub to fill up.
That is a really, really big tub. Do you have a water heater that can handle sometimes that capacity of water?
Well, right. And that's always, when you have the larger tubs, you definitely have to think about that.
Oh, so, I had never thought of that.
Yeah. You don't want to run out of the hot water just as you're, halfway up because you can't even get out of it without draining it.
Adjusting the water when you're standing in the tub, too.
Right.
Yes. Well, let's take a look at ovens. Ann's got a question for us. Hi, Ann. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have, remodeled my home more, and they're talking about these microwaves that are running in and stuff like that.
Yes. You have a question? I think we lost her. I'm sorry, Ann. I thought I'm. Things went quiet there, and I think we lost her. We have some other questions. One from Lisa, who says every winter our sliding doors freeze at the bottom and mold due to the moisture. They were replaced 5 to 7 years ago. What can we do to fix this?
That's a great question. So typically when humidity levels are too high in a home, the symptom is ice on glass, you know, typically on windows and on patio doors. And so the best way to deal with that, just kind of as the cause, is to reduce the amount of moisture that's in the home, particularly in the winter. And so you want to look first at where the moisture is coming from. You want to make sure you have a good ventilation fan that goes to the outside in the bathrooms where you shower and at the stovetop. And that will probably help reduce the condensation you're seeing. The other potential issue would be if you have a humidifier on your furnace. It could be that that humidifier is not really needed, because if you have enough moisture that you're getting ice on your patio door, you probably have too much moisture. Other things might involve a fan near that door to just encourage better circulation there. That might be the trick. It could be that it's a difficult area and that the heating system isn't really bringing, you know, circulating the air, and so you're having that problem. So those are the things that I would look at first.
And Maddie has a comment. Hi, Maddie.
Hi. I have a sister who has one of those walk-in tubs. It has a door on it. It fit right into where her old tub was, and she loves her tub. And it has a jacuzzi in it to boot.
Ah, yeah. Well, people like them.
Oh, the walk-in tub. People are very happy to hear that right now, actually. So I'm glad to hear that that's working for them.
Yeah, I mean, I've only heard good things about them, but it just, they're still a fairly unusual product. So.
And thanks again for those comments. We had a comment from Gary about venting. Gary suggested, and I forget which call this was relating to, putting a cold air trap in the vent pipe to minimize cold air backdrafting. And if designed properly and the fan is chosen properly, the vent still has plenty of capacity. So I don't see an issue with that.
Yeah, I mean, a proper damper is, I think, what we're talking about there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't, somebody, Justin, wondered if you can refinish an old cast iron tub without removing it from the area.
Yeah, I think we referred to that earlier as glazing, and it's a process where they actually put a new coating on top of your tub. I would say that it has a variety of lifespans. I have this in my own home. It seems to have worked out very well for 10 years. So it's a fairly inexpensive way to approach this. There are some limitations on how you can clean these and how vigorously you can clean them.
Yeah.
However, it might be something to at least investigate and take a look if it would work for your goals.
There we go. Guys, the time flew by. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It really flew by, and we'll get these guys back. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison, Chuck Weidenbach of the Kitchen Ideas Center in Madison. Both, we have links to their places of business on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and you can find those links right there. Just to take a look ahead, oh, it's garden time. It's Friday already, coming up tomorrow at 11. Melinda Myers joins us, our gardening guru. She'll talk about winterizing your landscape and answer all of your gardening questions. So look forward to that. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening. And please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.